Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
Get a TurboTax expert's undivided attention as they work on your return in real time. Experts can file as soon as today. Now, taxes is matching with a TurboTax expert who gives your taxes their undivided attention, just like your fantasy league waiver wire. They can file your taxes as soon as today, and while they do, you get real-time updates on their progress so you can go about your day. Now, this is taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com.
All I give a damn about
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Tom Pelissero.
God, I love that guy.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
There's a lot going on with the Steelers. There's continued to wait on Aaron Rodgers. They also have TJ Watt posting a photo of him giving the peace sign. I would fairly tell you TJ Watt probably is getting a little sick of waiting on the quarterback question as well.
Today's guests, Golf Channel analyst Brandle Chamblee, NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport, Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers, and now sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome to another Rich Eisenless edition of the Rich Eisen Show. I am Tom Pelissero. Pleased to be in studio once again with the fellas, Chris Brockman,
Tommy P,
who looks, you're like, I'd say 75% less Masters festive than you were yesterday.
I mean, I have a hat too. Should I just put the hat on?
Go all out.
I think it's I got used to the bright Kelly green. That really brought the whole thing together.
It was really bright. This is a little more foresty green.
Sometimes I doze a tad, you know, like an hour three of the show. But every time I looked at you, I was taken aback.
It was like the Kenny Rogers chicken episode of Seinfeld. Like, ah.
Exactly.
Gold jacket, green jacket. Who gives it?
Oh, Jason Feller.
Jay Feller was hot this morning.
He's hitting the buttons here. TJ Jefferson, what's happening?
You. What up, man? How you doing?
Tommy doing fantastic.
I'm glad. Went to the leather jacket today. Hey.
Hey, Tommy. Hey.
You know, somewhere, Winkler's a friend of the show, right?
Yeah.
Do you think he'd approve of the way this is put together?
Yes, I think he would.
1,000%. Yeah. His was black. Yours is brown. Yeah. All good.
But he had a brown one at times, too.
Okay. Yeah.
Definitely, you can go through.
And Mr. Henry's such a nice guy. I think he'd approve of you, Tom.
I think he'd like the homage. And I did think of it this morning when I looked at myself in the mirror. I thought,
I look good.
You got a rolled up pack of squares in your shirt sleeve, like Bowser from Sha Na Na.
I think those are. I think that's now frowned upon. I don't know if you can have the rolled up pack of smokes
you
anymore.
A Newport just tucked up under your
heaters.
I saw a photo this morning on Instagram or something of Tiger Woods caddy Fluff. In 97.
Yeah, buddy.
Are they still together?
And Fluff's long gone. Okay. He's like five caddies later.
Yeah,
Fluff, assuming that he's going to play again at some point.
Fluff's still with us. He's still caddying.
But yeah. Fluff, he's not dead. I just mean he's not.
I don't know.
Didn't you say, are they still together?
Yeah,
not
saying he's long still gone. He's still with us.
But in 1997, he's smoking a cigarette and using the cigarette to check the wind.
Yeah.
That's not that long ago.
No.
I sometimes forget how recently it was socially acceptable just to be smoking everywhere.
Yeah.
At major golf tournaments. You could still smoke in bars when, you know, in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So that's already getting
airplanes, restaurants.
I did enjoy the Robert Kraft head to specifically deny that there were still ashtrays in the armrests of the team plane.
He had to deny that.
Because that NFLPA survey is like, let me be clear. There are not cigarette ashing in the armrests. It does not exist. We do not have ashtrays.
Well, that's good to know.
So we've been told a lie?
Well, it's perhaps somebody said it, meaning that metaphorically. Like, man, this plane's so old. How old is it? So old, it's got ashtrays in the arms of the plane.
See, we need a new plane. That was a real thing.
I kind of wanted that to be true, just so I could keep bashing ownership.
If you think back, well, and he said they are looking to upgrade the plane.
Oh, great.
They are
great.
Looking to do
Thank
a lot
you,
of things
Robert.
And, you know, improve the locker room situation. They're
Spend
still
the money,
in.
Baby.
I mean, they're one of the last teams. They're still underneath the underneath the bleachers. You know, all the ceilings are kind of at an angle because you're right there.
Yeah.
It's a different facility, but they're investing. They're doing that. The ashtrays in the the ashtrays in the armrest, though, like made me think too. What's the thing you miss the most on airplanes now? Like, if you're thinking back to what it was like to fly in the late 80s, early 90s, I liked the phone that you could use. It was either in the back of the seat or in the armrest.
Oh, that's right.
And you could scan a credit card to like make a call. From like a corded phone.
Yeah, that's right.
I forgot all about
which was
that.
That was actually revolutionary because car phones were not particularly prevalent at that time. But you could be at 30,000 feet.
Right.
That was ahead of Wi-Fi, obviously.
Well, remember in the late '90s, early 2000s, it was the car phone in a bag. You had the bag car phone that you like plugged into the
right
the lighter.
Oh, I still had that. I jumped into I was interning at ESPN circa 2002, and I jumped into a pool with my cell phone in my pants, nope. Fried the cell phone.
That's not good.
My parents' solution, since obviously I had no money at the time, was to send me like their old car phone from like 1993, and for the rest of summer, I was driving around. Only worked if it was plugged in. If you needed to get a hold of me, you had to get me when I was driving my Toyota Previa, from Avon to Bristol. To show up and cut down 10-hour senior golf tournaments to 7 hours for a re-air on ESPN Caribbean.
By the way,
that was my actual job.
The Toyota Previa, one of the ugliest cars ever made.
It was. It had its moment. You know a car was bad when no one copied it. No one was
yeah,
like, right. You know, we really need our own egg van.
That design is... we need that.
It's the suppository of vehicles is what it was.
What year was it?
The Previa was probably a 94-ish.
Okay. Oh, that's
early 90s.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
Not, I mean, not a good looking vehicle.
You can look it up, but that thing could not have been manufactured for more than 2 or 3 years because you couldn't find them after that.
I mean, this looks like a good car to, you know, rob a bank with or something. I don't know.
The sliding door was very functional.
get out.
Had the big bench seating. And mine by that point.
You won't miss it, you know.
By that summer that I was driving that around to and from work at ESPN, had no muffler either.
Oh,
so
no.
It was full on like you're driving a Ford Mustang.
Wow.
So I was like, man, they're really revving it over there. What is that? Is that an egg? Is that a maroon egg-shaped van that you got?
Wait, they're trying to bring it back.
Yeah.
As an electric vehicle.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
No
2026.
Way. No way.
The Previa is coming back?
It looks much... It's not attractive still, but it looks better.
What?
Did we mention this show is brought to you by Hyundai?
Yeah, we're better for which are great, by the way. Awesome vehicle.
Love a Hyundai.
I am excited.
It is coming back. You're right.
I am excited to be here, not just to talk about egg vans and old airplanes. I'm excited because we have a 40-something-year-old quarterback who agreed to come to the AFC North. After all the waiting. No, it's not Aaron Rodgers.
Oh.
It's Joe Flacco.
Oh.
Who is headed to the Browns, a one-year, $4 million deal. That is worth up to $13 million with incentives. This is a backup quarterback deal on a team that at the moment does not have a starting quarterback. This is not the type of contract that you're giving to somebody who you anticipate is going to play a lot of games for you. And let's level set. Joe Flacco, everyone likes Joe Flacco, the guy. Okay, he's somebody everyone's like, oh man, Joe's the best. Just the best guy that you can have around.
He was the best.
Everybody loves him. He was also sitting on his couch until late in the season 2 years ago, thinking about a media career, deciding what he was going to do until the Browns finally called him. And he got his opportunity after 3 or 4 other guys got hurt. They rolled him out. He played pretty good football for 5, 6, 7 games down the stretch. That is by far the most that we have seen Joe Flacco play in many years. You got to go back to, I believe, 2016 to find the last time Joe Flacco threw 20 touchdown passes in a season. Okay, this is not... he's a 40-year-old man.
He's a man. He's 40.
Nobody played at age 40 until pretty recently. Brady obviously blew right by and played to 45. But for a long time, everybody retired at 37, 38.
Yep.
And this is not to suggest that there's not a scenario where Joe Flacco is starting out of the gate. But if you're asking yourself, and I'm sure there might be a few people who are Browns fans around the country asking this, what are they doing? I would say this. It looks very similar to what the Giants have done setting up their room. They spent more money on it. Jameis Winston got the Flacco contract. They also signed Russell Wilson for more money. The Browns at one point were in on Russell Wilson, but at a much lower price point, probably more similar to what Flacco just got. But the Giants, when they set up that room, my take on it, talking to people within the league, is they're setting that up to drop a rookie quarterback in as the third man. It gives you optionality in the draft. You don't have to force it at number three, but you're probably going to draft one somewhere along the line. You could even take one at number three. I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility that Shedeur Sanders could end up being the pick. I know there's some fans of Jackson Dart out there, but it would not shock me if the Giants took one at three. For the Browns, they add Flacco after adding Kenny Pickett, who's still on his rookie contract, not making a lot of money. So again, they've given themselves some optionality in that room. They're still paying a guy $46 million this year who, barring a major shock, is not going to play for the team. So it makes sense to go on the less expensive side. But this also seems to be the Browns setting themselves up to draft a quarterback. Now, does that happen at two? I would say that would surprise me at this point. But they got five picks in the top, 105 picks or so. They got a lot of draft capital, a lot of ways to move around, potentially move back into the first. Could move back, although I don't know that you want to move out of the elite player category, which they are in line to get an elite player, whether that's Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter. But you're going to be in position to draft somebody. The other thing that this tells me is that the Browns do not have confidence that the Falcons are actually going to be reasonable about moving Kirk Cousins. Because Kirk Cousins walks in the door as your starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. You trade for him, and let's say the price is a mid-round pick. Let's say it's a fourth rounder, which is probably along the lines of what the Falcons would be looking for in a trade. And they're going to want you to pick up money. You're bringing Kirk Cousins to start. You're not signing Joe Flacco to that contract going, well, we got our guy.
We're good.
Week one, yeah. Flacco magic. It's never good.
Flacco season.
It's never good when everybody is posting stuff about like, oh, the magic's back. Magic is not a real thing. Magic generally means luck. It generally means like right place, right time. You caught a heater.
We talk about the Irvin Johnson, bro.
We remember what happened when he came in for the Colts. You benched the number four overall pick, Anthony Richardson. You bring in Flacco. 2 games later, you went, all right, we just got to go back to Richardson. Yeah, this is bad.
Yeah.
And again, Flacco can function, and he's always had the thing that all the coaches who run the type of system that Kevin Stefanski does, which is very much, you know, precision-based, and it's a derivative of the McVay-Shanahan stuff. But what they always talk about is like Flacco's arm twitch. Even though he's this tall, lanky guy who is not a threat to beat you with his legs, he's twitchy in terms of how he gets the ball out, which is what you need. See it, rip it. That's also been Kirk Cousins' talent throughout the course of his career. I don't believe that spending $4 million on Joe Flacco precludes you for making a Kirk Cousins trade. But that trade is not going to happen until, in all likelihood, after the first round of the draft anyway. So if you're the Falcons now, you're sitting there, and if you were counting on the fact that eventually the Browns were going to be desperate enough, they would just give up what you're asking for. Let's say they want you to eat $20 million and give them a fourth rounder. That's a hard sell when you're sitting back and going, are they really going to keep Kirk Cousins on the roster? Is this guy eventually, are they eventually just going to need to get him out of there because they realize having a veteran, highly productive quarterback behind Michael Penix might not be the greatest thing for Michael Penix to have him looking over their shoulder? Eating a bunch of money and giving up a high pick, that's a tough sell. And so to the extent that the Browns have explored it, and other teams have explored it, the Steelers have explored it, I haven't gotten any sense that the Falcons are at a position where they're like, all right, let's actually do this. Because remember, they would also need Kirk to waive the no trade.
Right.
If all of a sudden you're down to Kirk's got one option and you're coming into him in July, he might just go, I'm good. No, thanks. I'd rather you have to cut me. I'm going to get all my money either way. So I can either sit here, not play, stare over the shoulder of Michael Penix, or you can cut me loose, or you can cut a deal that actually makes sense. I don't get the sense that Kirk Cousins has a great urge to help out the Falcons. He's not going to give up money, that's for sure. And so the Browns, the primary suitor for Kirk Cousins, all of a sudden now have made a move that, again, does not preclude them from making a Cousins trade, but definitely signals the Browns are going, we don't know if this is ever going to happen. So we at least need to get somebody in the building who we've seen play, knows the offense. We can roll them out there if we have to, depending what happens in the draft. And knowing how that front office, knowing how Andrew Berry think about these things, they're going to be examining every different way that they can maximize the value. Get the player that they want at quarterback if they're going to draft one, but also figure out what is the best way to do that. In other words, trading down, which is unlikely, trading up, which is certainly possible, waiting and letting it come to them later on in the draft, or shocking the entire world and taking a quarterback at two. It's the draft, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I can talk to everybody I want to. I can read all the tea leaves.
Yep.
And there are some things that happen that you just don't anticipate.
Plus, no one's going to give you a straight answer.
People will give you straight answers about everybody else.
Right. Not their own team.
You'll get very honest information about other teams from the right people. You generally will not get the absolute hammer answer on somebody. Definitely not on April 11th. Still 13 days out from the draft. And so we continue to wait on Aaron Rodgers, who now, his only option also happens to be seemingly the most logical option also for Kirk Cousins if he's going to get traded. Browns aren't out, but the one place that's not, besides Mason Rudolph, added somebody with a long track record as a starter in the most weird quarterback market I can ever remember is the Steelers. So, TikTok, Aaron, anytime. We'll get a lot more into the NFL, the draft, the quarterback market. Ian Rappaport's going to join us later. Quinn Ewers, former Texas quarterback, I believe making his debut here on the Rich Eisen Show. He's going to join us in a little bit. Another one of those quarterbacks that as we get past round one, quite possibly could be in play for a bunch of different teams. Coming up after this, though, it is Friday of Masters Week, as evidenced by Brockman's not quite as green as yesterday.
Forest. Pullover. I think this is forest green.
That is forest. What is the official green?
Let's see. What is?
I feel like you're in an Eagles vortex of, are you the 80s Kelly green, which is still the best, or the forest?
The official green of the Masters. Oh, this is actually the green green. It's a brilliant rye green. I think they're talking about the actual greens.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Pantone 342, which is used for the green jacket.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah.
That is not the color of the green jacket.
I think
that's darker.
So, I don't know.
We'll do some compare and contrast.
Again, like yesterday, I bought this off eBay.
Well, we'll get Brandel Chambly's.
It's a cross between the Kentucky bluegrass and
we'll see what Brandel has to say. Maybe he can do a color comparison for us. Coming up right after this.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there is the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. Don't let the urge to sing along to that catchy tune distract you from that truck drifting towards your lane or that lane-splitting biker creeping up beside you. Fortunately, every Hyundai offers advanced safety features that can alert you to potential dangers around you. And Hyundai has over 120 IIHS top safety awards since 2006 because Hyundai is always working to ensure the road doesn't get you. Hyundai vehicles have won over 120 IIHS Top Safety Awards from 2006 to 2024.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can also test your battery for free, in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, or a quick service? Well, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. I know, because it's happened to me. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
You are an accomplished water skiing enthusiast.
Yes,
you
I
once
am.
Worked as a water skiing instructor.
Yes, I am.
When the Happy Days writers found out, they wrote it into the script,
yes.
And that's how Jump the Shark was born.
Okay, my father said to me, "Tell Gary Marshall you water ski." I said, "I'm not telling him I water ski. Tell him you water ski." So he told me enough times, I went to Gary, I said, "I'm just going to say this. My father wants you to know I'm a water skier, and I was a counselor in camp as a water skiing counselor." All of a sudden, I'm water skiing. I pull up on the beach. I let go of the rope. I pull up on the beach. I step out of the skis, and I go, "Hey, look at that," and I'm smiling.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch the scene, half of that smile is the Fonz going, "Hey, I did it." And the other half is Henry going, "Oh, I can't believe you did it." True.
And you are aware of the phrase "jump the shark."
I am.
And it's meaning within the pop culture
lexicon,
right?
I am.
Right?
A young man, John Heim.
John Heim. Yeah, he's a Michigan guy.
A Michigan guy, yeah. In his dorm room.
Yeah.
With his roommate, don't know his name. They came up with the phrase "jump the shark" because of that episode.
Yes.
And I met him years later. Now, this is America. He comes up with a phrase. There's a book. There's a game. He's on the radio on the Howard Stern Network.
That's true.
Now, people say, "How did you feel?" Well, you know, that this phrase, "jump the shark," every time they mentioned it, and it was in the newspaper,
mm-hmm.
they had a picture of me water skiing. At that time, I had great legs. So I didn't care for 1 minute. We were number one for 5 years after that. What did I care?
That's
that
true.
There was a phrase.
That's true. That's true. And
welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm Tom Pelissero, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Looks like a great day right now for the moment at the Masters in Augusta. Brandel Chambly joins us right now, analyst for the Golf Channel. Is this going to hold up? We've seen reports of maybe thunder showers and things coming through. Is this morning group catching a little break here?
No, I think the weather's going to be good the rest of the week. At least that's what the forecast is. It rained a little bit last night. It softened the golf course up. So I would imagine it's as close to ideal scoring as it can get out there.
And we've certainly seen that this morning. Justin Rose, we've heard this one before. Your 18-hole leader. He's 9-under now, three shots up. What have you seen from him so far, and what are your feelings on, after five times being in this position, whether this could be the year?
He's looking really good today. One of my feelings, I he's got a marvelous career. It hasn't been, I would say, brilliant, but it's been a marvelous career. He's contended a great many times in major championships, got it across the line just one time, has struggled being in the lead more often than not. But today, he looked a little out of sorts early on. He looked like the nerves were probably not right there, but he was able to lean on his short game. He's been spectacular today with his short game, saving him when he gets out of position. And then just hit a gorgeous shot into the 12th with the whole location front left there. Hit it about 4 feet away. And now he's got 13 and 15 in front of him. So he's probably going to be tough to track down by the end of the day.
I just had to scroll down a little ways to find Rory on the leaderboard. One under, tied for 17th right now. He was rolling until the 15th yesterday, and it just seemed like, I mean, you've been in that position. Take me through that hole and what happened there.
Well, you know, the green is really firm. It's a new green, so it's a lot firmer than it has been in the past. And we saw a number of players knock it over the back of that green yesterday. A couple of them chipped it over, back over the green and into the water in front of this hole location. Most of them managed to play pretty conservatively, leave it 20 feet. You know, this is a maddening thing if you're a Rory McIlroy fan, and there's a lot of them, that he just does these things that you can't believe in major championships. He's been doing it for the better part of 10 years. It's like he's one player everywhere else. He gets to majors, and he's consistent in them, but he will have two or three holes where he just – looks like he's never been there before and just makes the most bizarre mistake. So he doubled there yesterday, chipped it in the water, knocked it over the back of the green at 17, and then chipped it on and three-putted. So he had two doubles in the last four holes, and he went from looking like he could lead the tournament at the end of the day to looking like, well, you know, it's pretty unlikely at this point that he can come back and win. He still has a chance because he's Rory, but this golf course does not treat chasers very nicely.
Randall, a ho-hum performance from Scottie Scheffler. He makes it look so easy with his 68 yesterday. Might get a bad break this afternoon with the wind picking up, but obviously you got to like what you've seen from Scottie so far.
Yeah, the thing about Scottie is, you know, like most great athletes, it's not any one thing that makes him extraordinary. It's an aggregate. Look, he's long. He's not the longest out there. He's not Bryson DeChambeau or Rory, but he's plenty long. You know, if I were going to make an analogy in baseball, he doesn't throw at 102 miles an hour, but he throws at 95, 94. So he's plenty long, but he's like Greg Maddux, if I'll continue the baseball analogy, accurate off of the tee. Last year on the PGA Tour, he had the smallest miss on tour. Most of the guys on tour that have the smallest misses are short hitters. Mm-hmm. You know, you just don't see what he did last year, if ever. And then he's an incredibly accurate iron player. He's a great chipper. And he plays the game very methodically, very strategically, very judiciously, much in the vein of Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. They're so good that I'm sure it occurs to him, like, nobody's going to beat me if I don't beat myself. They're going to have to come get me. And I'm just better than they are. And that's the way it is. Right now, even though Justin Rose is up there, Scottie Scheffler, I'm sure everybody's looking at him. And if you beat him, you probably win.
Yeah, he's still the betting favorite. And it's funny, too, you mentioned about not beating yourself and being smart out there. Rory has said that he wants to play more like Scottie. So that's why it was kind of bizarre to see him, you know, finish double-double there in the last four holes and kind of take himself out of the front runners.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that adage, leopard can't change his spots. Rory's just a little bit more impulsive. He hangs his head a little bit more when things are not going his way. And he just, you know, he doesn't hit it as straight as Scottie Scheffler. It's funny. Everybody says Rory's the best driver of the golf ball. All right. He is, but he doesn't hit it as straight as Scottie Scheffler. And he doesn't hit his irons as straight as Scottie Scheffler. He doesn't chip as good as Scottie Scheffler. And he just doesn't seem to manage his game as well as Scottie Scheffler. There was a time when Rory could do all those things early in his career, but they come a lot harder to him now.
Yeah, you mentioned Bryson before. A kind of a tale of two LIV golfers with him and John Rahm. Bryson's having a great day today. He's three back of Justin Rose at six under. And Rahm, yesterday on the broadcast, you could hear him talking to himself, just, you know, kind of belittling himself about how bad he was playing. Like, what have you seen from these two guys so far?
Well, I think in the case of Rahm, I feel like he comes into major championships and he's got something to prove, and I think he puts a lot of pressure on himself. You know, if you look at, and not many people look at LIV, the ratings are terrible, but he's finished in the top 10 in every event he's ever played on LIV.
Right.
I think that's a commentary on him, but it's also a commentary that the competition isn't that great. So, I think he comes in here and he just puts a lot of pressure on himself. Last year he came here and he hit the ball beautifully, tee to green. He led the Masters in greens and regulation, but he had 7 3 putts. So he just comes in here unorganized. Bryson, on the other hand, I think is more motivated. I think he's out at these LIV events preparing for major championships. Mm. I don't think he's put his heart and soul into it. He hasn't played any good at all this year on LIV. And he gets to the Masters, and he looks like he's having the best year of his life. There's a good shot right there. That's him hitting that bunker shot on the 18th hole last year at Pinehurst. He had some about 50 yards and hit it to about 3 feet away and made it. It was probably the shot of the year, the up and down of the year. And already today, he hit it in the left bunker on the fourth hole and holed it out. And it has hit some incredible chips. So, you know, you always think about Bryson DeChambeau as just being this Hulk Hogan out there playing golf. But he has turned into this little bit of a wizard around the greens. And you put that together and he's, man, is he good TV.
Yeah, and then, you know, much was made this week about, you know, when he hit 400 shots on the driving range. You know, they're tracking that now. And then, you know, last night he finishes up and then immediately goes to the range and he's there until dark. You know, it's so funny watching this guy kind of work.
Yeah, he was there till after dark. I mean, it was pitch dark, and he was still out there hitting golf balls. I can't remember if there were any lights on, but he doesn't need them. He's got his track man there. He hits, and he looks down at his numbers, and he, you know, he gets all the information he needs right there, I guess. He's a bit like, and I've made this analogy just a little while ago, he's a bit like John Daly in that he plays with this audacity. He plays with this recklessness, swings as hard as he can off the tee. But he's also like Ben Hogan. And I mean, those are just, you couldn't get two more
right.
Brewers at polls people. He never stops practicing. He's never stopped trying to perfect it. So when I say he's great TV, you know, people love to watch John Daly because there was a train wreck coming and he was swinging as hard as he could. There's not so many train wrecks coming with Bryson, although they do from time to time. But he's relentlessly pursuing perfection. And that's kind of cool. And I think he's gotten more humble. At least yeah, he's certainly
for sure.
To be. I hear people say it's not sincere. I don't buy that. I think he's grown up a lot, and he's really fun to watch, and he's comported himself as well as he's played the last year and a half, and you got to applaud that.
Yeah, he's a showman, and he's kind of come a long way since his comments of, oh, you know, Augusta's a par 67 for me, you know.
Yeah, you know what? Now that you mention that, you know, I had the pleasure. I got to go watch the Magic play Golden State this year, and I had great seats, floor seats. And Steph Curry came over before the game, and he was yucking it up with my buddy and my wife, and we were having a good time. And then he put on such a show in that game. I think he scored 56, one of the best games he's ever had. Made so many threes. Made one from well behind half court, right at the right at the buzzer. And then came over, did this little golf swing in front of us, you know, like having some fun with us. He was such a showman. You know, I'd never really seen him up close. And a shot maker and a showman. And I was trying to think, has golf ever had anybody who was a shot maker and a showman? And I thought, well, maybe Lee Trevino. But, you know, no disrespect. I mean, Lee Trevino was in the Hall of Fame, a hell of a player, but he wasn't he wasn't Steph Curry. And now that you mention it, I think Bryson might be the closest we have to Steph Curry as far as being a shot maker and a showman in the game. I'm not saying he is Steph Curry. Steph Right. Curry's in a league that we've never seen before, but he's the closest thing that we might have to him.
Yeah, I think it's close. I mean, last year at the Open, you know, the crowd was fully behind him, whereas, you know, Rory has been kind of the face of the tour for the last few years, and the crowd was really in Bryson's corner, and then he hits that amazing bunker shot at 18, and everyone's going nuts, and he's fist pumping, and it kind of seemed like, you know, he's the people's champ now.
There were eerie parallels to him and Payne Stewart. You know, Payne Stewart famously won there in 1999 and then tragically lost his life in a plane accident shortly thereafter. But Payne went to SMU. He wore that Tam O'Shanter hat. Bryson wears the hat in honor of Payne Stewart. He's back at Pinehurst. Payne made a great up and down on 18 in 1999. Bryson makes the great up and down on 18 this year. The parallels were eerily similar. And people, first of all, they love a winner. And second of all, they love people who hit it 9 miles. And they love people who kind of awe with error. You know, it's like, he's also kind of like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You know, you look at him, and you're like, that's not quite right, but it's really cool. And that's what he is, you know. And then I think there's the humility that we've seen. And then there's your YouTube channel. And
right.
You put all that together. You know, I love this that I'm sitting here talking to you, and I'm also thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do tonight on the show. And now that I'm sitting here, I'm like, I have a breakdown. I'm going to do Steph Curry. I'm going to do Bryson DeChambeau.
I like it.
then it has, you've saved me some time, actually. I'll try to put that together for tonight's show.
Let's talk about Ludvig really quickly. What do you think he learned from last year's kind of meltdown on the second nine there? And you know, he's off to a great start today as well.
Yeah, well, I would imagine we're not going to see him left of the whole location on 11.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, these guys are so good, and Ludwig's amazing. Hogan famously said eons ago, if you ever see me on the 11th green, you know I pulled it. And he was the greatest shot maker of his era. Of course, they were probably hitting much, much longer shots in there. Nobody's actually trying to miss that green to the right unless it's rare circumstances. What did he learn? I'm sure he learned a lot about himself. Everybody expects Ludwig to win major championships. He reminds me a little bit of Scottie Scheffler. He plays the game with a machine-like consistency. He just meets out great shot after great shot after great shot. So, you know, and he handles himself with so much class. The game is maddening. People lose their mind. It's sport. It's reality. But there is an absolute tsunami of profanity that is so prevalent in the game of golf. You can hardly watch a telecast without F-bombs falling like confetti at a wedding.
Right.
And look, I understand it. I don't know that I was as guilty of that, but I'm sure I've done it. And it's refreshing to see somebody come along like Ludwig, who never throws tantrums, never throws clubs. You will not hear him ever. I promise. You're not going to hear him yelling the F-bomb out there. He handles himself like Ben Crenshaw or Bobby Jones. And it's great to see someone come along like that, who's not interested in being, the cool kid who drops the F-bombs here and there. And I think that's refreshing. I really do. It's hard not to love Ludwig.
We've talked about a lot of the big names in this tournament, Brandel. Is there anybody we're not talking about or somebody you just like how they're swinging the club here?
Gosh, there's a lot of them. Look, I love the way Colin Morikawa swings the golf club. He's got a fabulous record here. We talked about, Rory, being four back from Scottie Scheffler, and he's probably the guy you got to beat. He's still got a chance. Colin didn't play his best golf yesterday, but I'm looking forward to watching him play this afternoon. Incredible move. Shane Lowry, I love the way Shane Lowry swings the golf club. I thought maybe he would have a chance. I think there were a lot of surprises yesterday. And one of them for me was just how unorganized Justin Thomas went around this golf course. The last 2 years, he's shockingly played poorly here. But he comes in here with everything you need to play this golf course well. I mean, I would easily have put him in the top five coming into this week. I love the way he swings the club, but I certainly don't like the way he plays this golf course. But the thing I think that your audience should know is that very quickly, Augusta National decides who can win this golf tournament and who can't. After 36 holes, going back 25 years, 25 years, go all the way back to 2000, the average position of the eventual winner is third place. If you want to know who's going to win this golf tournament today, you do not have to look past the first page of the leaderboard, and you really don't have to look past the first few names at the top of the leaderboard. So this is it's a terrible golf course to chase on. It's a fabulous golf course to lead on. So again, at the end of the day, if you're, I'm not going to say it can happen, but I mean, if you're in 10th place and everybody's like, you can come back, just doesn't happen around this place.
Brandel, I'm writing that down. Third place, and that's who I'm betting tonight after 36 holes. Got it. Thank you.
Brandel, thank you. Thank you very much. Try to avoid any tsunamis of F-bombs on the air tonight. We'll be watching on Golf Channel. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I can't promise anything, but thanks for breaking
up. We got through it. We appreciate it.
See you, Brandel.
Brandel Chambly joined us from Augusta, where apparently who is Brockman? Who is Akshay Bhatia?
Oh, he's great. He's a young gun, lefty.
He looks exactly like Dolphins coach Mike McDaniel. Okay. I just saw him pop up on TV, and I'm like, is that McDaniel?
Good one.
They're
good
twins. One. Like it's like a dead ringer.
Yeah, he's a young guy, and he's the first drive, chip, and putt youth to make it to the finals at Augusta to eventually play in the tournament, which is a super cool random nugget.
He's also the skinniest guy I think I've seen out
there. He's very thin and hits it very far.
I was laughing at Brandel's his comparison with Steph and Bryson, because Steph is probably the smallest superstar, just body type wise, we've ever seen in the NBA, and Bryson has to be the largest.
And Bryson's like toned down a little bit. He was way beefier a few years ago, and now, you know, he realized that wasn't the best
thing for his game. Where it turned was he stopped being completely muscle bound and all shoulders and actually got some flexibility in his body.
Yeah, and realized, you know, this isn't sustainable to winning championships. And, you know, we've seen what he's done the last couple of years. He's just tremendous. And he's three back of Justin Rose.
Here we go.
Heading to the par 5 eighth.
Tell me more, Jim.
Matt McCarty, I have no idea who that is, but he's made many birdies in a row, and he's 4-under today, and he's 4 back of Justin Rose, along with Sungjae Im, also 4-under today. But your round of the day at Augusta right now belongs to someone named Rasmus Højgaard. He's got that O, you know, with the line through it?
Mm-hmm. Not enough guys named Rasmus.
Because he's Scandinavian, you know? His brother, he has a brother who plays on tour as well. He's heading to Amen Corner at 5-under, today 4-under for the championship.
American golf writers everywhere very concerned that Rasmus is going to be relevant because they don't have the button on their keyboard for that O with the line through it.
Is that like a shift option situation?
I think it's function O.
It's a vowel in the Danish Norwegian.
Actually, don't do that. I don't know what function O does.
I think you said it correctly.
Potential problem.
Scotty Scheffler at 4-under. He's set to tee off in about 43 minutes. Tyrell Hatton. I remember we had issues with his name yesterday, but I do believe it's Tyrell Hatton. He's going to tee off in 54 minutes.
That was by far the funniest bit on the show, was your 7 different pronunciations of the early leader in Augusta. Hello, friends.
Hello, friends.
Some of you I know, some of you I've never heard of.
It's so green in Augusta right now as I'm watching it on 3K television in front of me.
The flowers are very pink. They're called azaleas. That's also a drink that I'll be having this weekend. Maybe I'll go live on Instagram, TJ.
That's also a rapper from Australia.
The projected cut is +1. Tom Kim, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, among others. Brooks Koepka sitting on the cut line.
I must say, our Jim Nance quiet golf voice sounds much more like people on NPR introducing some alternative hit from 1998. It's by the Blue Turtles.
Wasn't that also a Saturday Night Live skit where they just talked like this for the whole segment?
There was a delicious dish.
Bryson DeChambeau with a birdie on 8. He's now 2 back at 7-under.
And Brockman, let's make sure to make note of Tsunami of Profanity.
Tsunami of Profanity, I think, will be my fantasy
name. That's the name of the band that is playing our next hit. It's from 1974.
That's Tom's second favorite emo band.
On the Wings of Storks. All right.
Okay,
we'll get back to the NFL. Top of the hour, Ian Rappaport's going to be with us.
Hey, Rich Eisen here. I hear from a lot of business owners like you about the work it takes to pursue your passions. So I know how important it is to have the tools that can help keep you moving forward. And with access to world-class business and travel benefits, the American Express Business Platinum Card helps you take your business to the next level. It offers a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. Plus, you'll have complimentary access to more than 1,400 airport lounges worldwide, including the Centurion Lounge, so you can keep running your business while you're on the go. See how the Amex Business Platinum Card gives business owners like you the tools and rewards to do more of what you love. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/AmexBusiness.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. We know just how fast your life moves. You have bills to pay, mouths to feed, and not a lot of free time. That's why we created an all-in-one banking experience that lets you keep on banking on. It can save you time and money with new lightning-fast direct deposit setup, and it offers checking accounts with ATM refunds and no service fees. Plus, whether you have credit or not, you can build your credit score with the new ability to report on-time bill payments. And with personalized financial insights on My Making Sense, the ability to view all your accounts in one place, custom notifications, and 24/7 fraud protection, you can get a full picture of your finances. So if you want an all-in-one banking experience that lets you keep on banking on, sign up today. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Insured by NCUA.
I'm just trying to keep up with you,
bro.
Stop
it now.
That's it. I am. You do this. You got TV shows. You're the face of a network.
I'm not giving away cash and prizes. I'm not saying good morning to an entire nation every. Well, I guess on this show, I'm doing that.
Yes, but, you're doing that.
But it's, I guess maybe it should be the Good Morning Rich Eisen Show America or something. We could move
it. Let's not push it now. Let's
I was just saying, we need to workshop that idea. Got to workshop that idea a little bit better than that.
But it's good, man. I mean, and I'm one of these guys. I'm very grateful. And I understand I owe everything to the game of football. And I know there's a lot of flack about football and a lot of the things that have come back, you know, with the haunt, you know, some of the players in the game. And I know a lot of players out there, a lot of issues, and there's a lot of responsibility that needs to be had on their behalf and on all the players' behalf. But at the same time, I think, you know, I'm very grateful as well.
And you've got a second season of Pyramid coming up soon, right?
Yeah, $100,000 Pyramid, man. Come on, win some money, baby. Help somebody win some money.
By the way, you know I am a game show aficionado.
Are you good? You know, everybody says that. I'm not doubting you, but everyone says, oh, man, my mom's the same way. We did Chunky Soup commercials years ago. Oh, boy, I can act. My mom. So we get there, and her line was, you need a hot bowl of Chunky Soup to fill you up right.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, Denzel Washington? Where are you now? So the game sounds easy and the game looks easy when you see someone who's really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is tough when that clock is ticking. You got 30 seconds and that person across from you.
Stray, who are you talking to right now? Come on.
Rich, don't.
I can give clues. I can receive the clues. I know all of the business. I know you got to put your hands in the straps.
You know you set yourself up, right?
Oh, I'm ready to make somebody's $100,000 dream come true on your show. It's going to happen. Like Joe Namath. I am calling my
shot.
Oh,
you're like Joe Namath now.
You're
like Babe Ruth. You're calling $100,000.
I'm guaranteeing $100,000 for whatever lucky individual your producers care to pair up with me.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I love that show. It's the truth.
We're going to make that happen.
I watch the Dick Clark daytime version. I watch the Dick Clark nighttime version.
And
I watch your version. It is fun.
I love it because,
look, if Prime can do it, I can do it. He's coming up next.
Yeah, Prime. I gotta say, wasn't Prime's finest moment to do the show? Mm-hmm. He was giving body signals that didn't match up with the words. I'm like, what? How does that mean money? I don't get it. But to Prime, it made sense.
We got a lot more to come here on the Rich Eisen show here with me, Tom Pelissero, Quinn Ewers. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, a lot of questions for him. A guy who's won as much as anybody in college football over the last couple of years, yet is not really in the conversation among the top quarterbacks to go in this draft. I'm guessing he's going to have some thoughts on that. Ian Rappaport also going to join us at the top of the hour, dive a little bit deeper into the remaining quarterback madness in an offseason full of it. Joe Flacco is a Cleveland Brown again. Aaron Rodgers is still unaffiliated, unconnected,
unaffiliated,
undecided. We'll break all that down when Ian joins us at the top of the hour. Recent news and uncertainties around the economy really hits home for all of us. One thing that stands out about Hyundai is their commitment to supporting American consumers and making investments in this country. And no surprise, Hyundai announced that they will not be raising the prices of their vehicles through June 2nd. Not only that, they believe in investing right here in America, $21 billion to be exact, in the next 3 years that's meant to expand manufacturing, future tech, and create more jobs for Americans. It's not just talk. Hyundai is about action. Boss, welcome back to... Every time I get to the end of it,
it's about that action.
Marshawn's just on my other shoulder here.
Take care of your chicken.
Take care of your chicken. Take care of your mentals.
Take care of your chicken.
That's Marshawn. The all-time unique individuals.
Yeah, no doubt.
We've got, I think, a first for college football. We've got a spring practice holdout.
What?
The Tennessee quarterback, according to Pete Thamel, shortly before the show began, Tennessee quarterback Nico Iamaleava, or as he might now be known, Nico Iamaleava,
They're not going to work here anymore, that's for sure.
Did not attend spring practice. The sides have been in conversations about a new contract. According to multiple reports, everyone was shocked that he was not out there. According to the expanded story, the day before the winter portal closed in December, his representatives wanted to renegotiate his deal in the $4 million range. He's currently expected to make $2.4 million. Now with the portal set to open again on Wednesday, his representatives were again looking for $4 million, and sources told ESPN that Tennessee, quote, wasn't going to blink and pay him any more money. So this is what we've created, folks.
This is
folks.
What we've come to. Yeah, exactly.
And I want to be abundantly clear. Nico Iamaleava. If he ends up being Nico Iamaleava, I don't begrudge it. You reap what you sow. Yeah. And college athletics have spent decades refusing to pay anyone. Finally, with a legal gun to their head, they are close to an agreement about directly paying players, regulating things, and you now have players saying, you know what? I'm not showing up. Yep. And the rules say I can leave. Which, having talked to college head coaches about it, this is one of the worst things. This is probably the worst thing for their sanity, for their lifestyle, for program building, especially if you are not. And of course, Tennessee is a blue blood type program. But if you are not the Alabamas and the Georgias with unlimited pockets, the worst part of the job is you recruit guys. If they play well, other schools can come at them during bowl season. Then after spring practice, you can come at them again. Mm-hmm. Two different windows. You have to re-recruit your own players. And in the cottage industry that is quarterbacks, you're talking about millions of dollars. And there are many, many quarterbacks making this type of money. So that's where, you know, in reading earlier this week, the details of this pending agreement that a judge has to sign off on to properly compensate people for past and future, but also establish a salary cap of $20.5 million per school, allow major conferences to police booster deals. We're back, baby.
We're back.
We're right back to the old system, which is, okay, $25.5 million. The old cap was zero. So that is progress. But now the new cap is 20.5, and then it's, hey, police those boosters. You're literally back to where you were before. It's just, you know, you have a baseline of what people are making. And whether it's Iowa giving everybody the same deal, or whether it's schools offering $3, $4, $5, $6 million to a quarterback to come play one season, all this means is there's now just a different threshold for where you're going to have the under-the-table money. You have somehow created in this agreement, which, again, let's be clear, better than the old system of no dollars allowed and everything was illegal.
Right.
You are still creating the same old problem, which is that rather than just saying we're going to have some type of structure and regulation, you're saying, nope, can't go over that number. If you do, then that's a violation. Who is policing that? The conferences that have a vested interest in making sure that they're in the big bowl games and they're in the college football playoff, they're going to be the ones that are policing this.
You, Lieutenant Weinberg.
They're putting I don't see Greg Sankey like crawling under the table to see if someone's got a paper bag with some money in it. It's not realistic.
Yeah.
Like, how you spend this much time and you arrive at a system that is exactly the same. It's self-preservation. There's no question about that. But how in the world is that better? Ian Rappaport's going to join us at the top of the hour. Dive into all things NFL and the draft 13 days out. Stick around on the Rich Eisen Show. As for the situation in Tennessee, Nico Iamaleava is going to be a test case for how binding certain agreements are. The answer, of course, appears not. There's not... Right. There's not a collective bargaining agreement. That's the other thing. There's no union.
No union.
In the NFL, the reason that the salary cap and the structures of rookie contracts and tenders and everything else, the reason it works is because it's collectively bargained. Because the players are bound by those rules. Here you're creating a system where, by the way, you still can opt out of the main settlement and sue separately. You got the guy with the buzzer beater for Villanova.
Yeah, Chris Jenkins.
He just filed his own lawsuit while they're trying to resolve this. He said, you know what? I specifically would have made more money than I'm going to get. I'm going to do my own thing. I don't have a clear answer for how you fix it. My opinion has always been, for lack of a better comparison, this is, you know, medicinal marijuana. This is the regulation of THC, which is the harder, the more complicated you create of rules on it, the more people are going to end up just going to their dealers anyway. If you regulate it and tax it and just say it's all up for grabs, you actually get people to play by the rules because you don't have as many. If you create this complicated tiered system of, all right, we have a specific salary cap per team. Now, these booster deals, you got to regulate them separately, and anything over that's a violation. You're going to go back to a, quite frankly, feckless agency like the NCAA now just say, well, no, now the conferences can police it because we know, everyone knows we don't know what we're doing. Let's have the conferences who benefit the most from having the most good players on their teams go police it. And why? Because one coach complains about what another coach is doing. This is the old system. It's the exact old system. This is like The Office. It's like, it's the same picture. How do you guys not see it? It's the exact same problems that you had before. And these are super conferences now. Mm-hmm. The days of the 10-team conference are over.
See ya. 20 team plus.
Like, you're going to have to hire an entire investigative body on this. The way that things are calculated is going to be subject to it. You're going to have complicated accounting mechanisms. Listen, salary caps are ultimately good for sports. Look no further than baseball to see how out of whack the economics of your sport can get if you don't have a cap that promotes equity. This doesn't create equity. This just creates a system where the people who are best at getting away with stuff are going to have the best opportunity to win.
Bravo TV star Lala Kent holds nothing back.
There's been so many times where I'm like, I apologize that I said that, but that wasn't meant for you to hear.
Feel you there.
How fun would it be to bring in some Bravo celebrities and make our own bracket?
Iconic.
All right, I'll take Dorinda, you take Sonia.
Sonia is who I wish I could be.
You and me both. I cannot be someone in the program. What's PTO?
Paid time off, see? Oh. You never had a real job.
Give them Lala.
It is nothing but honesty.
You guys know.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.